This is an interview with Mr. Fred Beatty for the Oral History Project, Youngstown State University, by Bernice Mercer on November 5th, 1975 at 2:30. As I was saying, Mr. Beatty, the first thing that we want to really try to do a lot with is your home and your early schooling. We feel that this is quite an important part of the history. So, would you care to just go ahead on this?
Well, of course, Youngstown is my home. I was born here. My early schooling for the first year was the old Gilman Street School, which is now torn down. It was located on Hillman Street between Falls and, the corner of Falls Avenue and Hillman. Well, I think it was between Falls, what was then known as Lydia. And at that time, and after the first year, a new school was constructed further out on Delison Avenue called the Delison Avenue School, which is now torn down. And I went there for several years until...
Those school buildings, what were they like? Were they similar to the later school buildings in structure?
Hillman Street School was the old type of brick. It was a brick building, a two-floor building. And a number of schools in Youngstown, I think, were built not like that construction, like the Markville Market Street School. And then later Delison Avenue School was built. It was a three-story building with an auditorium up at the third floor, which we used for assemblies and plays and things of that type at a stage. There were no classrooms, as I remember, up on the third floor. I mean, no classrooms on the third floor, just the auditorium. So I went there for several years until another new school was built. Myrtle Avenue School down on Myrtle Avenue, where the Hillman Junior High is now located. And that was I forget now exactly what year that was built, but I continued my elementary education there through the eighth grade.
As you remember these early schools, what sort of feelings do you have about your school, your teachers, and your general school experience?
Well, I suppose it was normal with most youngsters of that age that
did most children enjoy school?
I think so. Well, it was a thing to do, and everybody had a good time. I don't remember that if there were any particular disciplinary problems that we ran into, like we sometimes hear about now.
This population of school was quite. There was several grades to one. Several rooms for one grade.
Yes.
And it was strictly graded at the time.
That's right. And in all of these schools, I don't remember the organization of Hillman Street School, but in both Delison and Myrtle Avenue School, there was either one or two sections of each grade.
So that it was populated, the downtown section there was almost as well populated as it is right now.
Well, let's see, the south side was growing rapidly at this time. It was really booming. And they thought by building out on Delison Avenue, they would build far enough out to take care of it, but and they had to build halfway between them, between Hillman and
Delison. That tells that story, the fact that they were misled about how fast the area would grow.
So that they were not only expanding out further, but within the area, there was more families building.
And about this, I also wanted to ask at this point about your father and mother. I remember that your father had those telescopes mm-hmm. later on, and I was interested in him. If you could tell us a little bit about, you always wondered why, how it was that he got to making the telescopes.
Well, his interest in stargazing and telescope making started very young when he was a boy in school. I think it was the Oak Street School on the east side that he attended, and the principal there of the school was quite interested in astronomy.
Did he ever talk about this man or his name? Do you know the man's name that did?
I can get it. I know what it is.
As long as we know where we get this.
In fact, it's written up in Howard Ailey's new book that's coming out next week on the history of the Mahoning Valley, Mahoning County.
Now, I didn't know he was writing, although I knew he had written a lot in the past for school books.
See, this is a 600-page history of Mahoning County.
Wonderful.
That's being bound now in Cleveland.
I was wondering if we could have Mr. Ailey for an interview too, but maybe he's made it so it wouldn't be necessary, but then I think not. I think we...
Well, he has a wealth of information. He would help out quite a lot, I think.
Yes, probably. Now, back to your dad and his, how he got to making a telescope.
Well, most any lens grinder, mirror grinder as he was, they generally start very small with a small 6-inch diameter disc of glass, and generally by their reading on previous work that's been done, learn how to grind this glass so it takes on first a spherical shape, and then they polish the surface so it reflects, and then they further polish it so that it gets in a parabolic shape, so that it reflects the image of planets, stars, into one point. And at that point then is where they view the heavens.
I didn't realize that he ground the lenses as well. He made the tube too, didn't he?
Yes, he...
Was he a metal worker? What was his occupation?
He was a plumber. So he did the whole works later on in life, when some of the telescopes were made. He had other men working with him that made the mount, what they call the mounting. But early he did the whole thing, all the work in the mounting and the lenses and everything he made himself.
You must have heard some things about this as you were growing up. Probably still.
It was part of the life of the family. Every night we knew it, he'd be out in the backyard there looking through the telescope on a clear night to see what he could find.
My goodness, so, that's something. This all through his life, he had this.
That's right. Right up until the night before he was taken to hospital with his stroke, he was still working on polishing mirrors, always with the idea of finding a better way of doing it. He never felt that he had reached perfection, but he knew that he was at the top of the list.
Think of something that starts in your elementary school years and is an avocation and an interest your whole life. That's really something great, isn't it?
But none of them, I didn't, nor did my brothers, take an active interest or as far as following through.
No, but it
was his hobby.
And you would have gotten the respect for that area of learning, that because of because of his interest, and it would give you some interest whether you followed it as your own avocation or not. Now, I don't know about all your brothers. I knew about the one that was in Youngstown as the coach for so many years.
Well, oldest brother, Harry, he became a plumber, learned his trade, and went in with Dad in the plumbing business. And next brother, Ralph, who's 2 years older than I, was he started in plumbing for a while, and then went into other kinds of work. He was in a variety of different jobs. His last job, I think, was sales manager for an automobile company, the Henderson Overland Company. But he had a phonograph shop for a while, and he was quite a salesman. He enjoyed painting and sketching. And somewhere along the line here, he through his sketching and drawing of portraits and things of that type, he became interested in anatomy. And he had not gone to high school, so he felt that he wanted to study medicine. So then he went to night school and finished up his high school education and went on to Ohio State University and got his degree in medicine.
Well, that's wonderful. At that time, that wasn't a very common thing. People thought they couldn't do that sort of thing at that time.
He had a difficult time getting into the School of Medicine because he was a much older young man at the time. And the policy of the medical school was that a graduate should have quite a few years left to practice medicine. And this would cut down quite a bit on the number of years that would be available.
But he persisted and got this accomplished.
He died a number of years ago. And of course, the younger brother, Dyke, went on to college, and he was interested in sports mainly. And
such a diversity of interests all through the family, except the two educators. You weren't the youngest.
No, I had a younger sister, and she, after graduating from South High, she went into secretarial work for a while, and then went to Missouri and went to the Central Bible Institute in Springfield, Missouri. That's the Assembly of God school there. And then after finishing there, she worked in the Gospel Publishing House and finally was married there to the manager of the publishing house.
Now, South High is really quite an old school. It hasn't been too much remodeled, or it has been added to a great deal?
Well, in the early days, it was.
Was it removed and made over, or
no,
is it still the same structure?
It was, I forget the exact year that the contract was let. It was around about 1908.
Second high school.
Yes.
In Youngstown.
And that was, of course, just a big field at the time, a big sloping field that sloped down. It was sort of like a ravine that went down from Market Street down east, and the ravine was quite deep in back of what is now Garfield School. And when the school was built, the front part of the school was built up to the full height, and the back wings were only built up just one floor high to some of the little things of shop classes in some other classrooms. And the gymnasium was built in the center part of it. And then later on, the wings were built up to the third floor.
Plan for expansion.
Then in along about 1921, then a very large addition was put on the northeast end of the building. That was quite a, I suppose it added about 50% to the size of the building when they put that on. But at that time, of course, there were still just two high schools, but the Youngstown was growing rapidly, and even that addition, within a short time, couldn't take care of the population.
Your distance from school wasn't very great, quite a little ways from...
We lived, I think it was just less than a mile to South High.
Well, I'm trying to think, I don't know, I had been around over Youngstown quite a bit, but most of the time I was lost. Didn't help me all that much. But now, how far did some people walk, or was there such a thing as a bus?
Well, they came in streetcars, of course.
There were streetcars.
Of course, we took in the entire west side, clear up Mahoning Avenue. So they all had to come down town and transfer and come out of Market Street. But most everybody on the south side walked. There was anybody who lived on the, well, some on the south side that were out and could use the Park and Falls line did come in on the streetcar there. But
everybody else just hoofed it.
Very, very few of them used the, that lived on the south side used the streetcar.
The population must have gone up amazingly rapidly, didn't it, after it was built? And
before the big addition was built on the northeast, I came in to teach mechanical drawing there in South High in the fall of 1919, and it was growing quite rapidly then, because just about a year after I came, South High went on half-day sessions. And this was strictly half-day session, one group in the morning, one group in the afternoon. I had a schedule starting at 12:30 in the afternoon, teaching till 5. Another group of teachers came in the morning early and taught till 12:30. Entirely different group of students in the morning and the afternoon.
Just doubled the capacity. Now this time, wouldn't you like to give us some idea what it was like in South High during the time that you were in high school? What do you remember sort of outstanding about high school? Things that impressed you and probably had something to do with the occupation.
Well, I think it took me a little while to realize this as a student, but after I was there for a year or so, I realized that we had an excellent core of teachers. And the teachers were selected there for South High. They were the best in their field that could be obtained any place in the United States.
Do you remember some of their names? Ones that thought specially of?
Well, some of the early teachers, some were moved over from Wren, and one of the outstanding teachers over there was Mr. Chatterton, and he taught me in Latin. Another teacher was Mr. Jones that came from Wren, and he taught me in algebra, and later on, the woman from Meadville Gene Fry taught me in algebra. And they were all expert. English teachers, I had probably different English teachers each year. And I don't think I had what you would call a weak teacher my entire 4 years at South High. They were all tops. Now, I think that's the thing that I remember most as far as the schooling is concerned.
Then, when you were ready for college, did you go to Youngstown University or Youngstown College?
No, it was Youngstown State. There was no college in there at Youngstown at that time.
Not at all?
No.
The YMCA?
That had to be started. No, everybody that went to college went to out of the city. Mm-hmm. So I went to Carnegie Tech at that time to take up industrial education.
I was wondering about this industrial or mechanical drawing. What was it you
taught? Mechanical drawing at all.
And then we've skipped the war time.
Well, during my schooling at Carnegie, of course, World War I started. And at the end of my junior year at Carnegie, I enlisted in the Army. This was in 1918. I think I enlisted about June 1st. And finally went in officer's training school. And during my schooling in officer's training school, the war ended. So I was back home again by the last of November. So I had a very short, just about exactly 6 months in service.
But during that time, this flu epidemic affected the Army camps and all, too, didn't it?
Yes, I was down at the Fort Monroe in Virginia when the flu hit. And we all battled the flu there in the Army camps. And every morning, of course, we would see a big group going to the hospitals to be checked and treated and so forth. Most of us slept out on the porches of the barracks there to try to get as much fresh air as we could.
Keep from picking up the phone. I'll imagine. We were going to get to this business about the flu epidemic related to South High. There are young people that are amazed trying to picture what this would be like using South High for a hospital.
Well, I don't have a good picture of that because I was fortunate enough to get back into school at Carnegie.
So you really weren't here during that period at all?
No, I got back in January the following year.
But your brothers told you about it.
My brother died, yeah. And there are quite a number in Youngstown who did live through that flu epidemic itself and had helped in the hospital there. And I suppose you could find one or two that have had that experience that would be glad to tell you about it.
That would be something I would be interested in. I don't know how I'll go about this, but it's possible.
I may be able to find out.
That would be an interesting thing because the way a city can respond to a crisis like that would be show quite a bit about the way the city was.
This Saturday, this week, they're having a South High reunion I'm going over. I'll see if I can find somebody, one or two, that were students there at that time and helped out.
Oh, that'd be fine. That'd be really fun.
But I knew that plenty died there. But,
it was bad everywhere. Yeah. It was bad where we were, too. Nobody got any school finished in the area where I was, either. They closed and stayed closed. I don't know if it's that way everywhere. Now then, the continuity here, we kind of regressed there, and that's all right. your feelings about your high school is very interesting. So many people have this feeling about the Youngstown High School. It must have just been superb to have people feel as they do.
Of course, Ray and school had the same reputation up until all through this period. There was quite a well-trained group of teachers, I think, that were enlisted in both schools. Never seemed to be any financial problem as far as hiring the teachers. They were all seemed to be willing to come in at the standard salary.
Which I suppose was, by today's notion, very low, really. You don't happen to remember what you were paid the first year at some point?
Yes, I, at the time that I started, in the fall of 1919, there was really a shortage of teachers at that time. And the man who had been teaching mechanical drawing left during the summertime and went to Cleveland to teach. So they were looking around for a mechanical drawing teacher. And I had finished my course at Carnegie and I was down in Pennsylvania. And I got a letter from a folks saying that the Youngstown Board of Education were looking for a mechanical drawing teacher. So in the meantime, though, I had rather tentatively agreed to stay at Carnegie and teach there. Because after I had finished in June, they were having some classes for returned soldiers at Carnegie, and I had rather agreed there to stay and teach them math. Well, I had signed up to teach there at $1,600 a year. So when I had an interview, I didn't see this. When I came back, or when I wrote in to the principal of the school, I didn't deal with the superintendent of schools. I dealt with the principal of the school, the principal of South High. I told him that I had planned to stay here and teach at Carnegie for $1,600 a year, but I would come to Youngstown at the same price. And so that's what they paid me, and I didn't realize that that was a little above what they were paying others. But I was fortunate, probably, that there was a little shortage there, and they needed somebody to teach. So, and within a year, then there was a 25% increase in salary. So that my salary then in another year was $2,000 a year, which was very much higher than the going salary for my experience at that time.
That interests. The difference in
later on, we had one superintendent of schools that was reviewing the difference in salaries compared with years of experience. He found that I was much higher in salary than my years of experience, so he wanted to hold me at that salary for a number of years, and I wouldn't sign a contract for the next year. I finally went out.
By that time, it was probably pretty obvious that he'd be a loser if he let you do that. Was almost all your teaching before you became principal fairly early on?
Well, I taught from mechanical drawing from 1919 to 1938. When I became assistant principal at South.
Do you remember what's your memory of the expertise in math of the average of your high school student? For one thing, Was almost everyone going to high school at this time? Were people ever dropping out from early in high school?
Well, I think nearly everyone started to high school, but a lot of them dropped out along the way. I don't have the figures on that, so I wouldn't want to hazard a guess on just what the dropout was.
But they were coming out of the elementary schools with pretty good math background. Is that right, or would you say?
Well, I would say with a very good general education. I think math would rate as high as I enjoy the math quite a bit, so I'm not sure that I would be a good judge of others' ability in math.
Well, I mean the students.
But most of them took math when they went into high school and took algebra, which was the course that they took, so their background was such that they could handle the math all right.
We've been so concerned in recent years, you know, because people come through the elementary schools and they can't manage it. That's why I'm asking.
I don't remember anything of that type in the elementary education. There might have been on the part of some students, but I didn't.
Also, I was trying to know. This matter of most people really went to high school. They were having an opportunity and they were taking, by and large, advantage of it at this time. And then you went on at South for a good many years after this. You wouldn't remember the principal's name when you first started.
Oh yes, that was Dyke, D-Y-K-E. He was there for 3 years. Then Walter Severance came in as principal. He was there for my last year in high school. And after Severance left, Mr. Reed came in, and he was a man that was there when he hired me. So in my early days, I was with all the principals, either as a student or a teacher, right straight through Bob Fleming's administration.
Probably nobody knows more complete knowledge of South High than you. Very few.
I think the most interesting fact as far as my determination or my desire to go into the administration was the inspiration that I got from what I consider the best principal we ever had in Youngstown. Mr. Ed Eaton. He was by far the superior administrator. And I was fortunate enough to, while I was still teaching mechanical drawing, this is before I became assistant principal, to assist him more or less in some ways of scheduling and things like that, and enjoyed his way of working. And finally I became more adept at scheduling and helped out quite a lot in that. So when Mr. Eaton left, and new principal came in, I was the one who had quite a lot of administrative experience there in school, so they moved me up to assistant principal.
Could you describe the difference, the things that Mr. Eaton did that were a lot better than the other principals had done?
Well, yeah. He hired a good secretary, that's my wife.
that's something else. The secretary is a large large share of the school, as I recall.
He was a man that commanded respect, there's no doubt about that. He was very forceful, very well-educated man, but he wasn't educated to the extent that he felt that a degree was the important thing. He realized that all types of education counted, and he was just as enthusiastic about commercial education, industrial arts, and all the various arts as he was about college preparatory. But all these were at a high standard, and he felt that a person could excel in education in any field at all. And if that was your bent, he encouraged you along that line. I'll never forget the assemblies that he had, because he was in command of the assembly. He was a very humorous man, for one thing. Rather an odd-looking man. This is back in the day. Do you remember Ben Turpin?
Oh, slightly, yes.
Well, some of the kids called him Ben Turpin because he had a peculiar-shaped nose and that, but nevertheless, he was an excellent administrator. You were sure of his decisions that they were right.
These assemblies, what would they be like? You remember them particularly, and the fact that he was humorous.
Well, back.
That'd be at the first of every day. There'd be an assembly.
Not
every day.
No, we didn't open up with an assembly. No, those were scheduled at various times during the week.
Whenever one was sort of called for.
I think we had more general good out-of-town speakers that would come in, specialists in various lines that would give a talk on some subject.
He was rather ahead of his time, wasn't
yeah.
he? That's the sort of thing I'm thinking about now.
So that the assembly was more of an educational type of a project. I think it broadened our education, something that we didn't get in the classroom. It wasn't just a fun thing or anything like that, as we often think of an assembly now, that there's a football game going on, we have an assembly to hoop it up, but we had more than that.
That would have pleased my dad a lot. Then was there other things that Mr. Eaton did? Was there something different in the way he handled discipline? With all this emphasis getting kids interested, I suppose maybe he didn't have so much discipline problem.
He was a man of in disciplinary acts. I think he was a man of, come in there a minute, Gertrude. We're talking about Mr. Eaton.
Oh, Mr. Eaton, he was great.
We were asking, how did he manage his discipline? He said he was, did things much better than...
He was a man of few words as far as discipline was concerned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He didn't seem to have any
but
any discipline problems. There were a few,
But it's hard to compare the schools then with now, because...
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Because
the whole, everything's different.
We didn't think of... anybody being bothered by discipline. The school was run so efficiently and it was good teaching that the problems we have nowadays, we just didn't have them.
You were filling their needs.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes an immense difference, yes. Now this... this matter of the history of South High. During this year, this like first 10 years that you were at the South. As you look at that all together, what things stand out that you learned or changed or anything like this in those years?
As a teacher, you mean?
Yes. And I suppose associate principal by this time, too. Assistant principal by this time.
Well, it was the... Of course, I was teaching there from 1938, so it was about 19 years as a teacher of mechanical drawing.
You taught mechanical drawing the entire 20 years, nearly 20 years.
Yeah. And I was not the only teacher. Generally, there were two of us that taught mechanical drawing later on after we enlarged the school. But all these industrial arts courses were very, very good courses. That a lot of us that took academic work and were planning to go on to college took many industrial arts subjects too, which doesn't happen too much anymore. So that
it's like you did it for the pleasure of doing it rather than you didn't need to.
So that we had very, very good classes in mechanical drawing, and I didn't realize this until later, the effect of some of these classes. But later on, after I became principal of Pillman Junior High, I remember distinctly one evening, there was a meeting of foremen of various plants around that the Foremen's Association were meeting at Hillman. And I was down to school that evening, and I just dropped into the meeting of the foremen, and I was surprised the large number of men that I met that had been students of mine in mechanical drawing. That is, the boys in high school at that time had a natural talent along that line, and they were increasing by taking mechanical drawing, which helped them after they got in the industrial plants to rise above the ordinary workman and become supervisor and foreman. And it was that type of a student that you had which made teaching enjoyable. But while I had them in class, I probably didn't realize their total potential either, but I knew they were good students. Of course, we had some that were not so good, like in any class.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them were in the mechanical drawing because they wanted it, and they, even though they had a high ability in math and science and everything else.
Mm-hmm. That made the whole thing. If you had realized that all along, you probably would have enjoyed it even more than you did. Mm-hmm. That was that they had the meeting at Hillman Junior High.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was that continued throughout your whole years. Was there any changes that came up? There have been additions in mathematics that courses that been used to be included since that time. Was it changing in any way the subject matter due to advancing technology at all?
Subject matter, as long as I was at South High, you know, 1946 when I left there, I think subject matter remained largely the same. Of course, there was a gradual change in science and things of that type, but there wasn't the experimenting and changing and trying out new types of teaching. The way we had them doing it seemed to work all right. There didn't seem to be any need for changing or so-called improving the courses.
Well, the subject matter itself wasn't changing.
No, no.
And like you said, there was many necessities.
Of course, as you realize, that the big change did not come until after the days of Sputnik.
During these years too, did you go to any further education? Did you take any postgraduate work?
I took a number of courses with the Western Reserve, and courses they were giving in Youngstown. There would probably be a course every year for teachers, or mainly industrial arts teachers, and we would take those. And I would probably take one course a year or something of that type. But I did not go to summer school while I was teaching. So that I graduated.
Western Reserve professors would come down here, like, for evening classes?
Yes, that's right.
And where would those be held?
Most of them were held over at the administration building. And it wasn't until after I got to Hillman that a little more pressure was put on me to take more courses. And I took several courses over at Westminster, but never did complete my master's degree.
I can't help but remember how beautiful that building and when was that built? When I first saw it, it was...
That was built in 1940, or opened in 1940.
And I remember my daughter teaching there. We admired the building. It was such a beautiful building.
Well, I think after the building was built, there was a pride in the building, and I was lucky enough to walk into that type of an atmosphere. So go ahead. Is that there is not a definite follow through with some approved change in teaching. I think I can explain this better by staying maybe to one subject on mathematics. When they started experimenting with math, when they started the so-called modern math, which doesn't mean anything to me, but it was a change in the emphasis of math, that various types of math that could be taught at various levels. They found that some things that we thought could only be taught at a high school level, some algebraic types of thinking could be taught to fourth and fifth graders just as well, and they would eat it up. I remember distinctly visiting some classes up at Sheridan School and sitting in with some of these classes, and I was amazed at the thinking of these youngsters when they were talking about powers and roots. And various types of mathematical work were changed around at various levels that they could understand it. But what happened is, after a couple of years like that, youngsters go back in a normal type of teaching with somebody else, not related to what they'd had at all. After a while, they go into high school and they fit into the same program of algebra, geometry, and so forth, straight through. Now, I'll admit that there might be slight changes in the content. But there never has been, there isn't, as I understand, nothing yet of a definite change in the teaching of math from some elementary grade and followed consecutively through high school. And I think that youngsters have lost tremendously in their ability to get math and their understanding of math because for some reason or other, it hasn't been possible to do this in the teaching. There have been a number of, I wish that they'd never put in the term modern math, because to me, math is the same math as it always has been.
They took a lot of math out once upon a time, and then when they put it back, it was not.
Yeah. They, some things that they have put in under the term of modern math, like sets and things like that, I think with the various bases that they've used, and that the 10 base, the 2 base, the 3 base, the 4 base, should have been reserved for a particular type of a student. But as far as the general student is concerned, you've never been exposed to it.
All it did was confuse.
Yeah, it was confusing.
How do you suppose this will ever be done? Is it depending on a textbook or a system of some sort, or how can this ever happen?
I'm not sure how it
can. I'm a little familiar with what you're talking about because I taught a while.
I'm not sure how it can be done. School systems have been dependent, of course, on textbook publishers, on a particular textbook that's been published along a certain line, and that's been adopted for a certain school and used. As far as I know, schools have never been in a position where they could dictate the type of a text they wanted. And ordered this kind of a text to be published by a publishing company.
What happened was somebody published it, and then you had to choose between what was already published.
That's right.
Instead of...
So that schools have not taken the lead in this. Educators have not taken the lead. The textbook publishers have, and of course, I'll admit the textbook writers probably are educators, there's no doubt about that, and probably are familiar with that particular subject they have been writing about. But not always is it the type of a text that a school should use. And of course, as you know, there's been a lot of controversy on what type of a text to adopt. We've never been unified on that in any school system. And I don't know how that thing is going to be linked.
Maybe the time will come that teachers face this instead of some of the other things they're working on, get together on this, get a little militant on something of that nature, it would help.
There, if we go back in the early days of teaching, although we look back at it, maybe some very poor textbooks, but I'm thinking now that in my early days of teaching and early, there were improvements in texts occasionally, but not a big change where it was disruptive. And I think that's the point that it becomes very bad. There have been certain systems that are brought out by science research and various other companies like that that I think have some very worthwhile things in them where students can progress along individual lines. But
In the classroom, it's pretty hard to get the time, the schedule, so that you can take advantage of even those.
It's very difficult for a teacher to handle all the miscellaneous type of abilities in various places where they are along the line to keep each youngster progressing on his individual capacity.
This discussion is interesting to me, and I want to thank you very much for giving us this time. I'm sure it'll be appreciated. And
educational institutions. I think there has been too much emphasis on the plain degree without any recognition of what has been taught, what how it's going to be applied. There has been no recognition at all, with very few exceptions now, state one, where colleges have simply refused to recognize any experience that you've had as being worth a nickel. You could teach for a dozen years and do an excellent job, but as far as an educational institution is concerned, for higher education, it isn't worth a cent. It's not recognized as far as any credit is concerned and on any degree. There have been inroads lately on this, but not very general. Of course, a big start has been made by high school general education development tests in high school to get your diploma in high school, which I think is wonderful. But colleges and need to recognize this in general. I think they have an obligation to evaluate experience in terms of credit for degrees. I'll give you one example which floors everybody that I talk to. When you were at Hillman, I'm not sure whether you were there when Jody DeGeneres taught or not.
I was there. No, my daughter was there.
Yes. We had a guidance program at Hillman before there was any guidance program in the city at all. We were the only school that had anything like a guidance program. We used teachers on each level. We had, this was group guidance from the 7th grade, 8th grade, and 9th grade, where I picked out one teacher to handle the group guidance. And these were changed once in a while when some teacher didn't care to continue with it. Jody DeGeneres became guidance counselor. Guidance wasn't a counselor particularly, that was only a small part of the work. He was sort of guidance director on the 9th grade level. He moved out to California and went into social studies, but then wanted to get him the guidance there. They told him that he would have to take some further work in college on guidance. He called me one night in California. He said, "Will you send me write a letter to me telling me what the type of work that I did there, the type of guidance program we had in general, to send that to the college," and he gave me the college. He got 15 hours of college credit for the work that he did at Hillman.
Now that made some sense, didn't it?
This was the kind of guidance they were looking for in California. It wasn't worth a nickel in Youngstown. But out there, they were striving for it. Now this is the thing that I think is entirely wrong. I think colleges have got to recognize the type of work that's done in the school, which in turn will improve the teaching. If teachers know that the results of their teaching are going to be recognized this way, it can't help but do.
It was definitely a help to the people in California that you could see that. If they had been here, they probably forced him to take all of credit out.
And I think this is one reason I never got a master's degree. there were certain things that I needed, courses in statistics and things like that, that I took in at Westminster. I needed them, and I took them, and I used them. Other things were a repetition of what I've been doing for years.
So you just didn't bother?
I didn't bother.
That's all right. There's your idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm very happy that we